All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NFL podcast. It's Friday, October 26th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
James Davis.
And we are from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com or DFSR.com. As you all well know, at this point, DFSR.com/deals gets you, the podcast listener, that free 7-day trial. So go check that out. Free for 7 days, where you can try out all of our tools, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, premium chat, premium content, all covered there. And then just for podcast listeners, it's $24.95 a month, and that will seal up that. I think this can be the last week we run that deal, so make sure you go and check that out. DFSR.com/deals gets you started. We are here breaking down week 8 in the NFL. We're going to go game by game for a relatively short slate. All things considered, a bunch of teams on buys. We have another London game in addition to those primetime games. So we're looking, actually, pretty not limited options, but at this point, yeah, there's 10 games on the main slate, which is the least we've had any time this season. But do you like when there's less games in these? Like, do you think that it provides more edge, less edge to have fewer choices? Or does it kind of, in the NFL, maybe it doesn't matter as much as I'm maybe thinking that it does?
No, you take it on a week-by-week basis. I mean, sometimes less games means the mistake from playing the best play to the second best play is bigger, and that can tend to benefit us from time to time. But sometimes less games means that you just wind up picking from a pool of kind of undesirable but similar players, and that I don't like quite as much. And that was kind of the vibe I had when writing the picks article this week, especially as you went down into, say, like cheaper running backs. Like, if you can't pay up at both running back slots, and, you know, we actually had some opportunity avail itself to us later in the week with the Powell injury, which I'm sure we'll get to when we talk about that Jets game. But at the time I wrote the article, it was very much like you had the good plays like the Mixons, you know, James Conner, Kareem Hunt tier, the $8,000 running backs on FanDuel. And then you had like this total question mark tier of guys like Tarik Cohen and Kerryon Johnson and Philip Lindsay and Nick Chubb and stuff like that, where none of them seemed, you know, dramatically better than the other. So in football, it tends to be the bigger the slate, the more value we have, and the more safer lineup that we can construct. But yeah, it's just a week by week thing.
All right, let's get started with the Redskins and the Giants. This game started with the Redskins -1 road favorites, and then has now switched to the Giants -1 at 42.5 over under. The Giants, I mean, what do we say about this team at this point? They have two of the best offensive weapons in football, you would say, in Saquon Barkley and Odell Beckham Jr. And they still have Eli Manning as their quarterback. I just don't know. At some point, like, those guys cannot overcome. And Barkley kind of has, like, done to the best of his ability, overcome the fact that Manning just is terrible. But as long as Manning's the quarterback, how much can we even trust? I mean, how much do we trust the Giants at this point? Because Saquon has, like, elite usage on the season, and the team just seems so bad, and yet they're kind of, like, mini home favorites here. What are your thoughts on the Giants?
Yeah, I think Barkley is, you know, I'm happy to be wrong about a guy like this, just in terms of him being able to make it work even in a bad offense. You know, my biggest concern about him going into the season was that, and especially after week one, when he only had two receptions out of the backfield, was that in bad game scripts, he just wasn't going to have the ball in his hands enough. But the Giants have, to their credit, I guess, put the balls in the hands of one of their best players quite a bit. Double-digit targets in each of his last two games, scored a touchdown in each of those last two games. He's definitely a guy you can consider paying up for in the right matchups. The offense is obviously like utterly reliant on him right now, and he's, you know, proving that he's worth it. So yeah, I think he's playable. He's definitely a nice big tournament option for sure. Beckham, similar story. I mean, he had a 9 target week against Dallas, but other than that, he's had double digit targets in every single game. He's still priced a little bit below the peak prices for him in the past, although I will say that probably some of that's justified just based on the fact that Eli just looks like a shell of his former self. So I still think actually, if you look at Eli's game log, there's a case to be made that you can pair him with, you know, one or both of those guys, because Eli's so cheap. He's 6,700 on FanDuel right now, and I think he's still capable, just by virtue of having such incredible weapons at his disposal, of having like a 30-point fantasy week. But if you're going down this Giants route, you probably don't want to be doing it in cash games.
Yeah, I think I pretty much agree. Right now, but Barkley is 4th overall in usage after Gurley, Zeke. Oh, I just lost the last guy. Who's the last guy? Gurley, Zeke, yeah, Connor, James, and then Barkley is 4th. And you're right, the game script hasn't really mattered so much for him. And he just looks great. It's really such a shame, because when you watch him play, he just looks like he has like that video game sort of mode where you can tackle him. His thighs are like as big as my like whole entire torso, each one of them.
Hot thigh talk. Like, let's go.
But yeah, like, if you're going to just, if the receptions are going to be there as well, And you just wish that they played on a better team with a more, you know, a little higher implied total. But I'm with you that it makes for a pretty significant upside GBP play if they can put it all together. I will say the Redskins' defense has been decent this season, all things considered. Their offense is a mess. Is there anything to like on the Alex Smith poo-poo platter of guys that he just kind of randomly throws to at times? Or like, are they just don't do enough on offense to really take them seriously from a DFS perspective?
They don't do enough on offense. I think, you know, Peterson, he's an interesting tournament target just because he should have very low ownership and is still touching the ball a ton. 25 touches in the last game against Dallas. But yeah, obviously, like, you'll see, it's funny. So he doesn't have very many touchdowns. He has 3 touchdowns, none in the last 3 weeks. It's not because they don't want to give him the ball in the red zone. It's just because his team's terrible and can't score. So yep. If they do happen to get down and close a couple of times just by accident or whatever, because the Giants' D is not that great, then you could see a decent game out of Peterson. But obviously, you're not considering any of these guys for cash, I don't think.
Yeah, Thompson is questionable to play this week. They have a bunch of wide receiver issues with Crowder kind of doubtful. They threw Doxson, led the team in targets for 6 last week. This team just doesn't really do enough from a fantasy perspective week in and week out. All right, let's move on. Seattle goes in and plays Detroit. Detroit -3 favorites. Really high over-under here in this game. 49.5 for two teams that really you don't really think of when you think of just real prolific offenses scoring. They are going to get good conditions in the dome. 26.25 implied points for the Lions. We've wanted to target Lions receivers in the past at times. They've played some weird game scripts where the targets really haven't all the way been there. Like last week, we just saw Kerryon Johnson just go completely nuts and get all the carries. What do we want to trust in this team? Is Kerryon just like, is he the bell cow sort of running back? Can we project him for mid-teens type touches on a week-to-week basis? And then we still see LeGarrette Blount getting those goal line carries. It's hard to know to make a Detroit at this point in the season based on how they use their personnel.
Yeah, so I'm not excited about playing the Detroit running situation. I know Kerryon had a big week last week, but Blount still had 10 touchdowns. Or 10 touchdowns. That would be a lot of touchdowns.
Oh, 10 touchdowns. Holy cow.
10 touches. 10 carries. And he's getting all the short yardage work. And 3 touchdowns in the last 2 weeks for Blount means Johnson's just not going to get the ball down there. So can he break off a long run and punch one in? Sure. As we've pointed out in our ebook many, many times, a vast majority of scoring in the NFL, it's like 75% or something of all scoring is done from that last 20 yards. And of that, like 80% of it's done from 10 yards and in. And Johnson's just not the guy from that close. So he can get a bunch of yards all he wants, but if you don't get those free 6 points, then by actually scoring the touchdown, it's really hard to be fantasy viable at 7,000.
Yeah, and what about the wide receivers here? I mean, guys like Tate have sustained some double-digit target weeks at times. Same with Galladay. They started off the season sort of almost sharing a double-digit target per game. That's dropped off, but again, they barely threw the ball at all last week. Do you see them as having some tournament upside because their performance has just dropped over the last couple weeks, or are you too... Or are you just worried about their pass? I kind of want to be bullish on these guys in this, especially with the price coming down a little bit. And I don't know, when there's so many mouths to feed, it's also just hard to just kind of pick out the one guy.
Yeah, it's the problem is that it's not just the last week or two. Like,
That's what I mean.
It's been basically the first 2 weeks of the season, they threw the ball a ton, 100 total, 99 total attempts for Stafford in those first 2 games. Since then, it's gone down every week, 36 attempts, 30 attempts, 26 attempts, 22 attempts. Now, the reality might still be around that 26 to 30 figure, but it's really hard to sustain. Like early in the season, you were seeing Tate, Galladay, Jones as this like three-headed monster that could all sustain $7,000 price tags. It just hasn't worked out that way. And I think any amount of playing, especially Galladay and Jones, is just in the pure speculation realm for me. At least with Tate, we've seen sustained high target share in the past, but you're also still kind of paying for it. And going from, you know, 15, 13, 8, 8, 7, 6, that just follows the Stafford attempts thing perfectly. So sure, big tournaments. If you think this happens to be the game just because the total is up there, that Detroit needs to, you know, play run and gun and try to keep up with Seattle, then maybe. But I'm also just not convinced I shouldn't bet the under in this game because I also don't see a whole lot that I like on the Seattle side either. I mean, Wilson, this is another guy. He hasn't topped 26 pass attempts since week 2. Like, I don't know. I'm not really excited about either side of this game in spite of the high total.
According to Pro Football Focus, the worst cornerback matchup is Tate is drawing that one in the slot. So if you're maybe thinking that he's going to get that's not, and I only say this because typically that's not the case for most teams. Most teams have their most rated cover corners on the outsides. That is not the case with Seattle. So it looks like Tate is drawing the hardest matchup. Could free up maybe some more targets for Jones and Galladay. Seattle is coming off the bye, and I'm with you. Like, you know, Chris Carson ran 14 times before the bye. Rashad Penny ran 9 times. No one's really seeing a ton of targets here. Baldwin got 8 targets. He's kind of been playing hurt all season. I'm with you. This is they're unexciting offenses to think about. And I do want to say I do think there is some upside on some of these Detroit receivers in a game where if they have to revert back to passing for some reason, like go back to 40 attempts, I think we probably are buying low-ish on some of these receivers. And again, it's always just so hard with Detroit to figure out on a game-by-game basis who is going to be the beneficiary of those targets. All right, Baltimore goes in and plays Carolina. Baltimore is a 2.5-point road favorite. Cam is questionable, but it looks like he's going to play this week. Baltimore has really kind of screwed things around with the running game at times. None of them have looked all that good, but Flacco still has thrown a ton of passes this season. They've really transitioned this offense to more of a passing offense with Flacco, and he's been pretty good when having to throw the ball. It seems to make a big difference to actually have three receivers that can catch the ball on a consistent basis. He's averaging 40 passes per game. Do you see that being the case here with Carolina? Carolina's played okay defense. They play kind of slow, so you don't get a pace uptick for Baltimore here. What are your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I mean, I've been a believer in Crabtree. I know that you hate the guy personally for some reason. I don't know exactly what happened there between you guys. Maybe you're just not a Texas Tech fan or something. Not sure, but I still believe in Crabtree. I still think he's underpriced on DraftKings. I still think the best is yet to come for Crabtree going forward. Our system likes him as the fourth highest points per dollar wide receiver and the best in the of the probably the viable guys that you're actually going to play, not like the Maurice Harris, Seth Roberts, just probably free guys who would need to do a double take on their targets category, basically just behind Robert Woods. And I think that's fair. I think Crabtree, however the Ravens have been using him so far this season, he still is a good red zone target, and he still is drawing 9 to 10 targets a game, and that's just worth more than $4,800 on DraftKings. So I think you'll see cash game ownership out of him, and I think it's justified. The other guys, they're a little bit more hit or miss for me. John Brown has been just a total Jekyll and Hyde, which is understandable given the kind of routes he runs. But to go from 4 catches on 14 targets 3 weeks ago to 7 catches on 7 targets and the biggest game of his season for him last week just leaves me scratching my head. I don't know that you're going to want to, you know, I don't know if any serious projector would tell you with any great level of confidence that they know what to expect out of him from week to week. But obviously he does have the big game in him. The Ravens are funny, man. It's a lot of passes going around. And for me, I really only think I would want to connect with Crabtree there.
The Carolina is coming off a game. Cam threw a lot, 39 passes last game, 7 rushing attempts. At times we were on McCaffrey for wanting to believe in that he was going to get a lot of running back touches. He still got a lot of targets, but he only touched the ball 13 total times last week. Those, especially the rushing numbers, haven't really been there for him as the season's progressed. This is a tough defense as well. What do we think about any guy on Carolina, or is it just fine to avoid? Yeah, I mean, right now McCaffrey with 15 total carries over the last 2 weeks. I know some of that's game script stuff, but they just really haven't been running the ball. Is it just too tough to trust them against what's tantamount to a pretty good defense in Baltimore?
Probably for cash, but I think McCaffrey is definitely representing a pretty huge value in tournaments right now. We know that McCaffrey has 30 touch upside and he's 7,300. We also know that receptions just are worth more than carries, both because you get the half a point or full point per reception on depending on which set you're playing, but also just in terms of total yardage. So McCaffrey the last 2 weeks, like if you had a wide receiver who had 8 targets, 7 catches, 46 yards, 6 targets, 6 catches, 51 yards, you'd be like, that's not really where you want to be for 7,300. But if you also knew that guy was going to get 7 or 8 carries a game, you'd probably think pretty hard about it. And we know with McCaffrey, it's actually 20 carry upside when things happen to go well. So I think he's definitely still playable in big tournaments. I think people are sleeping on him a little bit, and I think the price has come down too far. I still don't think you probably need to play him for cash as an underdog here in a game with certainly on the lower side in terms of the totals here. But yes, keep him on your radar for big tournaments.
And then, you know, guys like Funchess had a pretty hit 11 target game last week, did end up catching a touchdown, went 6 for 62 and a touchdown. Double digit targets are tough to project for him. He has at times trouble getting separation, and they have Baltimore has pretty good cornerbacks as well. So I don't think this would be a spot where I would really, of all the receivers I think you can play on these slates, Funchess doesn't strike me as. He's got some touchdown upside, and he's definitely not anywhere close to a wide receiver one sort of type commodity, even though we did see double digit targets out of him. Now, Kansas City going in, excuse me, Denver comes into Kansas City. Kansas City, big favorites here, minus 10. Yeah. We talked about Kareem Hunt as a cash game possibility yesterday. Whenever you see this kind of double-digit home favorite line, you really need to start paying attention to who the running back is going to be for that team. Hunt has shown sort of elite usage, so we talked about him yesterday. We also talked about Tyreek Hill. Do you think we see people stack like or try to stack like Mahomes, Hunt, and Tyreek or something like that in cash? Is it even doable at their price points? Because they have the highest over-under, the highest implied total by kind of a couple points in this main slate. And well, maybe the Rams are right there with them. But do you see that stack as one, and even an option based on their prices? And two, is it have enough floor that you can kind of stack cash for stack KC for cash?
I'm not trying to be there for cash, I don't think. I think there's just other guys that are better values. I don't think you really need to go crazy just trying to pile on all the guys from one team. Also because Mahomes will spread the ball around to some degree. So like there's no telling. Like, so, you know, on the flip side, say you're playing a team like Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh of the past would even be a better example. And you could get Roethlisberger, Bell, and Brown and be like, eh, you're just going to get all the points. That's not necessarily the case in KC. Like you could have the rare Travis Kelce game. You could have, you know, one of these other guys, Sammy Watkins or something, punch in a touchdown. You know, Kareem Hunt could just get pulled if they're up by too much. You know, like there's a lot that could go wrong by investing that much salary in it is really where I think you want to think about it more carefully, because at that point you're investing $27,000 of your $60,000 into three players from one team. And that doesn't really matter so much, except for when you're doing it while ignoring other value that's on the table. Like if they're the three best value guys, you just do it, and I think you accept some of the variance, but I just don't think you need to. Like Mahomes in particular, like taking a quarterback as a 10-point favorite against a team that's much better against the pass than they are against the run, I don't know. I just don't think I'm going to be settling in that spot.
Yeah, and the prices have come up on these guys, and for good reason. They're just very expensive because they just run an offense where they just pile on points every single day, even though the attempts aren't even always there. Like, you know, Mahomes' pass attempts per game are fine, like they're in the mid-30s, but the fact that he's mid-30s pass attempts and just been so much better than every other fantasy quarterback just means they're just scoring these long touchdowns, and it's very actually difficult for guys like this, at least for our system, to sort of figure out you know, what's real around these kind of attempts, because these attempts have been so much better than basically any other, excuse me, that's not so much better, worth so much more than basically any other quarterback, to a point where it's like sort of like outlierish to just pile on this many points for so little opportunity. And I don't know, we're seven weeks in basically, and nothing has really stopped. So Mahomes is definitely a guy our system is not struggled with, but it just looks so different than anything else we've really seen, that I wonder if we're still kind of just like too low on the guy. Does that make sense what I'm saying? Like it's just such a weird, crazy, awesome performance by a guy, and we just don't typically see stuff like this.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's awkward to continue to under project a guy, even as the evidence points to him being a tremendous player, like 24 right. passing touchdowns through 7 weeks. I mean, good Lord, it's just not really something you see. So, you know, it tends to be when you see something that you don't normally see, it's more smoke than fire. In the case of Mahomes, you could easily see him sustain, you know, being maybe even the most expensive quarterback for the rest of the season, and it still might not be worth $9,200 depending on the matchup. So, I don't feel the need to force myself to play Mahomes. I think our projection on him is pretty good right now. And if he burns us by continuing to hit the two standard deviations away from what anyone could have reasonably expected from him, right. then, you know, God bless the guy. I don't know. I think he won't. I guess the long story short is, too, we're seeing cash game ownership on him come down a little bit anyway as the price has gone up. And I certainly don't feel the need to be one of the 10% of people playing Patrick Mahomes in any given week either.
Denver, Royce Freeman was questionable/doubtful to play, but now there's some chance that he's going to. Philip Lindsay was looking sort of interesting, although as a big underdog, it's really tough to sink your teeth into a running back that's 10-point underdogs. Freeman, if anything, I think Freeman coming back just makes it so that I don't even need to think about it. I think that I feel better about that part of it, where I just like don't really want to think about Philip Lindsay as a possible cash game play as double-digit road underdogs. But this is a team that could be passing from behind. Do you see guys like Sanders, Sutton, Thomas, and I probably should have said Sanders, Thomas, Sutton in that order, but do you see their passing game as having any upside, thinking that they might just be coming from behind and needing to play catch up, so maybe the attempts kind of go through the roof?
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I'm landing there. I think guys like Sanders and Thomas have nice upside here. It'd be really hard for me to pull the trigger on the running game. If you think they trust Keenum to throw more passes in this game just because they're going to be playing catch up, then they got to go somewhere, and why not to their two best receivers? You know, last week we saw Keenum with just 21 pass attempts, and Sanders and Thomas had a huge majority of those. And if you're going to double those passing attempts like he did in the Rams game when they were behind, there's going to be a decent amount of usage to go around.
Cleveland goes into Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, another big home favorite, -8, 28.5 implied points with a 49 over under. We were all over some of these Cleveland guys last week, Baker Mayfield, Nick Chubb, David Njoku. They're have a pretty low total right now, only 20.5 against the Steelers. And we talked about on the Steelers side, James Conner as a probably a chalk cash game play just based on his pricing and how they've used him. I don't know if we want to expand more on Connor, because we talked about him at length yesterday, or then we can maybe talk about some of the Pittsburgh passing game as well, because obviously guys like Brown and Juju are considerations every single week. What do we think about those guys? And then is there anything to kind of hang your hat on from the Cleveland side? Has there, you know, getting rid of Carlos Hyde, have they consolidated enough of their offense that you can play them even with a low total?
Well, I think you can definitely play Njoku. I think you can definitely play Landry. I think both of those guys are still too cheap relative to what I believe to be their typical opportunity in a game where they're 8-point underdogs. I'd rather not play Nick Chubb. He was fine, kind of touchdown dependent last week. And now you're going up against a team that's a decent run defense, but more importantly, they're 8-point favorites. Like, there's just plenty of scenarios where Chubb gets 12 carries or whatever this week. Right. And, you know, we were happy to play him at bargain basement prices, the mid-6,000s. Like, you just need to be bringing more to the table than that. So I'd really, really rather not. On the Steelers side of things, Connor, I do believe, should be a chalk cash game play. I am a little bit less excited about playing the wide receiver core. I think both Brown and Schuster are truly elite when it comes to just what you ought to be able to expect from them over the course of a whole season. Again, being 8-point favorites, and Pittsburgh has shown that, like, there will be weeks where these guys get low to mid single targets. It just seems like you're sticking your neck out just a little bit. Brown did have 16 targets even in the bad weather game against Cleveland early this season. So if you want to, like, lean in any particular direction, maybe you think about playing Brown. But I think in a week where you kind of need to pay up at running back, it's going to be really hard to, you know, say take two reasonably expensive running backs and get $8,800 wide receivers. So I think I like these plays. I think they're good tournament plays. They'll probably be on the outside looking in for me for cash.
Brown's had some conversion issues this year. Only 56% of his pass. He's only converted 56% of his passes into receptions. That's among the lowest. Only behind Jarvis Landry in terms of just how few of their balls they're converting. He probably is going to draw a little more Joe Hayden this week. So I don't know. I want to play Connor, and I always get worried, but when I play these Pittsburgh guys in I don't know why I said Joe Hayden, because this is the wrong team. He's going to draw Demaryius Randall. I get a little bit worried about these Steelers guys just because this is the irrational part of me. It's like, I always feel like I have the wrong Steeler guy. That's just that stupid thing to think about. It's like a stupid DFS, like, unanalytical way to think about it when these teams just have multiple big time weapons. I don't know. Maybe I've just got a little PTSD. I'm just picking the wrong guy on a week to week basis. Cleveland, I think you can play the Steelers D in terms of DFS. They're coming pretty cheap. Cleveland has a low total. We've seen them, Baker, just make bad decisions at times. We do have the Steelers as one of the highest. We might actually have them as the highest projected defense in this slate, and which is actually making me a little think there's something wrong in there. Either way, though, they're coming very cheap at only $3,800 on FanDuel. So I think we can definitely roll out the Steelers as maybe even the cash game.
Yeah, I think defense. They were showing up in 100% of lineups on FanDuel and like half of them on DraftKings. So yeah, too cheap. Looks like a mistake price.
Yeah, I actually do think our projection on them might be just a little high. Another game that's going to have a lot of fantasy implications is the Bucs go in and play the Bengals. This game started at 53.5, is now up to 54.5. But what's interesting here is a lot of those points have come up on the Tampa Bay. The points came up mostly on the Tampa Bay side because it started as the Bengals 6-point favorites, and now it's down to 3.5 home favorites. 29 implied points for the Bengals, 25.5 for the Bucs. How much exposure do we want to this game? It looks like a shootout, and it's got two pretty good offenses that haven't been totally willing to play defense against the respective opponents. What kind of exposure do we want here? We did talk about Mixon and Jameis yesterday in the cash game article, our pod.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Mixon, we talked about Jameis, we talked about Andy Dalton too. So I think we are gonna probably wind up having a decent amount of exposure to this game, and I can understand why. I mean, like you said, it's already one of the games with the highest totals on the slate. We've seen consistently good performance out of the Tampa Bay offense, kind of against all odds. The real question for me is, like, I still definitely think that Jameis is going to be a fairly highly owned player here, but can you play anyone alongside him? I mean, we've seen guys that have had extreme fantasy relevance in the past, people like Mike Evans. You know, he's still below his all-time prices in spite of the fact that his quarterback is playing better than he ever has at any point in his career. You have DeSean Jackson at a low $6,000 price tag, and this is a guy who was, you know, garnering 8-9 targets a game for some amount of stretch. People have flirted with these Tampa Bay tight ends. Like, is there something that can be drawn from this game besides just Jameis, or from Tampa Bay besides just Jameis? Like, are any of these guys, do they pass the safety slash smell test for you there?
I mean, he throws to the tight end a decent amount, especially in the red zone. So I think maybe like an OJ Howard tight ends, kind of thing. Though.
He's got Brayton and Howard.
I mean, yeah, I know. It's very difficult. You can't trust the running game. The receivers, he spreads it around too much. I think he's like, you know, when they use the term naked quarterback, this is a situation to use Jameis like that, especially for cash, because the it gets spread around too much. Like you said yesterday, the running has really been there for him. I think I'm fine just playing him and just sort of rooting for him, just making sure that he gets himself into the end zone or the ball into the end zone. Like, the running game has been such a mess that you don't really worry too much about it, and they are underdogs. Yeah, it's hard to really sink your teeth into anything else from a safety perspective on their side. And it's a shame, too, because they just have, it looks like they're going to be playing from behind, and I don't know, in a game that's going to have a lot of points. One guy I want to get your opinion on here is AJ Green. So John Ross is out. AJ Green has had 14 and 12 targets over the last 2 weeks, and is now facing arguably, really not even arguably, the worst passing defense in football over the course of the season. Tampa Bay has just really, really gotten crushed through the air. Are we maybe low on AJ Green? We only have him at 10 targets this week. That feels low to me, knowing that Ross isn't going to be playing and they are sort of compromising the rest of their receiving options. Should we maybe bring him up to like maybe 12 targets a game, or would that be too bullish on a guy? Because I could see him being a very popular play, knowing that the defense they're playing has just gotten passed all over the season.
Yeah, I mean, the issues with the passing defense here are really, really dramatic, and I think you definitely could see significant ownership going the other way. It's just, you know, anytime you are projecting that level of target share that you're talking about, I just think you have to be somewhat cautious, you know.
Okay, so like same price, AJ Green or Davante Adams? They're same price on DraftKings, 79 for Adams, 8,000 for Green.
Okay, take Adams every day of the week. I mean, Adams, Green's averaged 12 targets the last 3 weeks. Adams has averaged 14. Adams has done more with those targets. He's converted more of them and has a better quarterback. Like, he's just a better player, I think. So I think I'll just take Davante Adams. I know Cobb is probably coming back here, but I also think Adams, if you zoom out on his track record for the whole season, it's a better track record than Green, who, you know, was struggling to get into that double-digit targets early in the season.
And we are, again, looking at Mixon as a cash game play. He gets enough work in the passing game as well. I think, yeah. I'm pretty sure opposing running backs have destroyed Tampa Bay as well, especially through the air. They just can't really cover them out of the backfield. Mixon lines up perfectly for this kind of, even if he's going to get work in the passing game, the usage could be very high in Mixon. There's a bunch of different game scripts that really probably raise his floor. He's getting expensive, and I'm still willing to put him in that, just maybe below that group of elite guys, with as long as they have Geo out of the lineup right now. So Mixon, it definitely ranks up there in terms of a very, very safe play. All right, let's keep moving here. The Jets go in and play the Bears. Jets are big-time underdogs here, 7.5 points to a Bears team that's played good defense, but now are without Bilal Powell. Isaiah Crowell is going to get, I guess, all the carries. He's very cheap on DraftKings. Yeah. He's 3,700, and this is a game where they are probably just going to be playing from behind. What do we do with a running back that looks like he's going to get all the touches? They have Trent Cannon there, so who knows if they still want to do a two-headed monster. But 3,700 for Kroll, now without the running back by committee, it would seem. Is that an okay place to play an underdog running back? These are traditionally just the worst spots you can play a running back, and he's just so cheap on DraftKings.
Yeah, I think he's too cheap to ignore. We've seen big weeks out of Kroll. He can be decent on a yards-per-touch basis. I think we've seen from the Jets that they would just as soon, like whenever possible, the Jets seem to want to run the ball. You know, like last week, I guess, wasn't a great example of this. And they still carried the ball like 18 times over the course of the game. The prior week, Powell had 16 carries and Kroll had 11. So like, or I'm sorry, 13. So that was 29 total carries. This team just wants to hand the ball off. And I think if you are a team that really wants to hand the ball off, you're going to find ways to do it. And when you only have basically one running back left at this point, and he's 3,800 on DraftKings, I think you just have to play the guy. I don't really see a way around it. I think the only way that this winds up burning you is if for some reason the Jets just, for whatever reason, just don't consider a Kroll a full three down back, but they just haven't been passing to the running back that much anyway this season, so it concerns me less than other running back by committees that lose half a committee mate. Like, a lot of times running back by committees do so because they really believe that one of their running backs can't really catch the ball effectively out of the backfield, but that doesn't seem to be an issue for the Jets for me.
What about 6,000 on FanDuel? Does that strike you as something you can get into for cash? It doesn't feel as cheap as the 3,700. Obviously, there's bigger price spreads here in terms of DraftKings pricing, but he's coming in to FanDuel run right now at 6,000. It makes me feel a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, I'm a little uncomfortable with it. I don't think it's horrendous, though. I think, you know, $6,000 price tag, especially if you're comparing him to his peers there, it's not like we have some great, really super consistent $6,500 running back that we're going to play and we're just kind of like dangerously punting down to Kroll to get away with it. It's like a decision of, it's really a tiers decision. Can we play two running backs for 8,000, or are we going to have to go cheap? Right now, our system is leaning towards the more expensive running backs, but it's still dabbling in a little Nick Chubb to me. And I don't think Nick Chubb is, I think lineup two has Nick Chubb in it. If I had to decide between Chubb and Kroll, I'd take Kroll every day.
Real quick, Jermaine Kearse, you wouldn't have known it from his stat line, played every single snap on the offense last week. 64 snaps, was the highest snapped wide receiver. 2 targets, 0 catches. That's pretty damn bad to do. He was kind of a chalk play. He played a lot of the snaps. He's still coming very cheap. We were bullish on him last week going into the week. How much should we greatly alter our projection? This is a guy that had seen double-digit targets for multiple weeks out of the slot, and all of a sudden just totally disappears. Do we want to be overreactive, underreactive, properly reactive to a performance like that? Because, I don't know, they did pass to him a lot, and they have thrown out to the slot a lot, and that's just, man, it's such an outlier game. It's so crazy.
No, I think you can overreact to it. I don't think it's... I mean, the only reason you might not want to overreact to it is because there was a weird game script here. Like, the game did just get out of hand. The Vikings ran away with the game. Kearse seemed to not be able to find separation, but you just saw other guys just getting the targets. You know, like, you saw Robbie Anderson go out for 10 targets. You saw Trenton Cannon get 5 targets. You saw Chris Herndon get 7 targets. Andre Roberts got 6. Like, it wasn't for lack of passing that Kearse didn't find a home. It was because he couldn't get open. I mean, Darnold threw the ball 42 times and completed just 17 passes. So I think there's a lot of reasons to be concerned about him going forward. He was, 47% owned in cash games last week on FanDuel. I expect that number to drop, I think, for good reason. And at 4,700, I could see a case for playing him too. But I still think if you can get 2 targets in a week where your team was trailing this much, you were out there for every snap and your quarterback threw 42 passes, that means your floor is 0. And that's what we saw last week. So at 4,700 ultimately is still a hell of a lot of money to invest in a 0-point performance. We got lucky that we just had all the other good plays and still cashed by whatever 30 points, but it wasn't for lack of trying from Kearse's part, that's for sure.
On the Bears side, they played in some weird scripted games. Well, not weird because they were underdogs to New England that lost last game. And then a very weird game against Miami where it looked for all intents and purposes like they were going to crush and then just end up losing in overtime to a Brock Osweiler random start. Tarik Cohen and Jordan Howard have kind of split snaps over the last couple weeks, though I'm not sure how much of that is game script. They have their big home favorites here. Again, this is where we want to usually target running backs. Are these guys just kind of sharing the load too much to trust one of them, or could you see a big Jordan Howard performance in this game?
Yeah, I think Howard, it's this dynamic between Howard and Cohen I find kind of vexing. We saw Howard, being a perfectly serviceable ball catcher in the past and just totally lose all his targets, like 1 target in each of the last 3 weeks. That's a yikes, buddy. That's real, real, real bad. And Cohen, almost regardless of the game script, is still getting his 5 to 13 rushing attempts, but he's also just getting 8+ targets on lockdown. So I don't think you really want to be in the Jordan Howard business. The real question for me is, can you be in the Tarik Cohen business? For a guy who is, averaging double digits targets, a little bit disingenuous since 13 of those came in the last game, but nonetheless, yeah, averaging double digit targets in the last 3 games, 69 receiving yards is the minimum in that stretch, and you get some carries on the side. Is Cohen cash game playable for on DraftKings, on FanDuel? I mean, FanDuel is 7,100. That might be a little bit rich. But on DraftKings, I mean, this guy, he's getting you 10, 12 points for free just out of the passing game every single game. What about him in a running back slot on DraftKings?
Oh, man, he's a little too expensive. 5,800 for a guy that just still gets out-snapped, that's where I just kind of don't want to be. I get it. Like, the 22 targets over the last 2 weeks.
The man gets the ball, right? Like,
I know. And Allen Robinson's questionable this week. I don't know. Like, if they were down another pass catcher, possibly, but still, 5,800. I do think you're still asking for a lot to go over. Great tournament play. Because anytime you're going to, it's like that James White kind of thing. If you're going to get
from the passing game the last 3 weeks, 15 points minimum for starters.
Yeah, it's close. I'm not saying it's not. And I'd be a little bit worried that they get up on this team and then it's just going to be all Jordan Howard. But I think, yeah, from an upside tournament play, I think that it really does check a lot of the boxes because, one, people are going to be turned off by the price, so you'll get very low ownership on him. And two, there's game scripts where he can just touch the ball easily 20 times a game, and there's not really many other running backs in the league that can do that. Do keep an eye on the Allen Robinson news, because if they're down another pass catcher, we just could see more targets. The Trey Burton, Taylor Gabriels of the world, Cohen as well. Those guys could stand to see more targets. What kind of, and the Bears have a lot of implied points. 26, their defense is interesting as well, although they're very expensive. Colts go in and play the Raiders. We talked about Andrew Luck yesterday. He does get T.Y. Hilton back again for another week. Clearly liked passing to him in the red zone. Hilton got a touchdown. Marlon Mack had a great running performance last week. It's been very hard to figure out what's going on with the Colts running game. Let's talk. I mean, I don't know how much more we want to delve in to the Colts here. Eric Ebron, still, Jack Doyle still looks doubtful for this week. Ebron's been a pass catcher. Is there anything else you can kind of sink your teeth into for the Colts side?
Now, the Colts aren't too exciting for me. I mean, I talked about Luck as a potential play. I think you could even play him as a naked quarterback, or play him alongside of one of the real cheap guys, like even Chester Rogers with T.Y. Hilton back, maybe Eric Ebron. But the problem is they spread the ball out a decent amount. Luck throws so often, but his passes are not very high value. You know, averaging just 6.26 yards per attempt means that even if you do catch an Andrew Luck pass, there's no telling that you're actually going to do anything with it. So I don't really see a whole lot that I'm excited about on the Colts side. You know, Ryan Grant potentially missing here opens up some opportunity, but man, it's just these targets are so low value that it's pretty rough.
Yeah, Luck threw 23 times last game to 8 different guys. It's going to be tough to go crazy on one or two specific guys when he's just that willing to just make sure sort of everyone gets there. It's just finding the best guy to throw to in any given situation. If that's going to be the case, even at 42 attempts, let's say, in a high scoring game, giving anyone, I don't know, more than 8 or 9 targets a game is going to be tough. And we saw Marlon Mack, 19 carries for 126. He outsnapped, he more than doubled up Wilkins and Hines' snaps, although they did end up running the ball a ton because they were just winning by so much. I think if they were really to concentrate on one guy and Mack was going to be the guy, he becomes interesting, and there's just probably just still too many running backs in this mix to totally trust it. Now, the Raiders are interesting here because, one, I hate the Raiders, but two, they jettisoned a lot of the guys that had a lot of the opportunity coming through the first couple weeks. So Marshawn Lynch is on IR. He's done for the season. They traded away Amari Cooper, so he's gone. How much do we want to reapportion their usage here? The Colts are a pretty good defense to play against. The Raiders have about 24 implied points. They're 3-point underdogs at home. But Doug Martin, he's going to be the running back here now. It looks like for the early down stuff. Jalen Richards, a guy that's been targeted a lot. I bumped up Jordy Nelson and Seth Roberts. It's a lot of points. It's a lot of opportunity to go around. I'm having a little trouble figuring out, or maybe just being sort of positive about where it's going to go.
Yeah, I mean, Richard playing that kind of homeless man's Tarik Cohen impersonation, like that in those mid-single digits targets. He's cheap on DraftKings. You're definitely not going to play him on FanDuel, I wouldn't think. They just don't want to give the guy the ball on the ground, so I can't be too excited about it. Doug Martin, like, just heaven help you, man. Like, the guy
stinks. Forget him.
He's horrendous, and he can carry the ball as many times as he wants. 6,000, again, just not that cheap. Like, am I going to play him over Isaiah Crowell? No way. It'd be crazy to do that. So I think you can.
He's averaging less than 3 yards a carry over his like last 600 carries or something, or 400 carries or something right, like that. I looked it up yesterday. It was some insane number. He's been so bad for so long. He's going to get the carries now. But what about the wide receiver game? Because Cooper, you know, they could throw a lot. Carr has thrown a lot of passes this week. Not like Cooper was a crazy ball hog when it came to targets, but they are basically losing. Let's just call him the wide receiver one for the team. They're losing their wide receiver one. can we trust guys like Jordy Nelson and Seth Robertson? Cassius Robertson specifically is coming cheap and did lead the team in targets the week before the bye. No, excuse me, he was second to Richard. He had 6 targets the week before the bye. Richard had 8. How much do we want to give these guys targets? Because Seth Robertson, a guy coming very cheap, could see decent target share with no Cooper.
Yeah, Seth Robertson is one guy that's interesting. It's not clear to me that Robertson is a direct beneficiary of Cooper's vacated targets, frankly. And the other thing with Roberts is he is in the concussion protocol right now. He would practice this week, but he was limited in Wednesday's practice. So, you know, it's just always another thing. The thing with Roberts, though, he's just free. I mean, 4,700 on FanDuel is going to put him in that discussion coming off 7 and 6 target weeks. And if you compare him to someone like Jermaine Kearse that we played last week, you know, with some amount of confidence, I think the track record is at least similar to Kearse's, and the increased opportunity makes him interesting. These other guys, you know, the Martavis Bryants, who should be a theoretical beneficiary of Cooper's targets. Jordy Nelson, you know, could also theoretically run similar routes. I just need to see it first before I would think about playing them in cash. And I get that at that point it might be too late, but just like a lot of times when we're in this target speculation business, I think people sometimes get confused. A good time to be in the target projection business, or like, you know, speculating on an increase, is when a guy was already sort of okay, you know, like a guy is already getting, like Roberts, you know, 6-7 targets a game, and he's not really doing a whole lot with it, and then like all of a sudden Davante Adams is out, right? It's like, oh, okay, hold on a second, like we have 14 targets to give around on this team, like this is like a pretty big deal. In this case, you have it bad both ways. Cooper was not a very big targeted guy in the first place, and none of these guys were good or even remotely a consideration either. So it's like, I just can't really be excited either way. Like, certainly not excited enough for cash. I get behind why people might want to try to guess right for big tournaments, but I just don't think you need to put your whole cash game on the line for these guys.
I think we're going to probably see a big game out of one of these cheap guys. And like you said, it's just going to be tough to know exactly who it is. This is still not a very good offense. David Carr in the running game. David Carr is his brother. Derek Carr in the running game just aren't that good. And this is why I bet the Oakland under to start the season, because I just don't think they're a very good team and they're not very well coached. And somehow they got a first round pick out of, for Amari, which is just like, seems like collusion at some point, although I'm not sure how it helps the Cowboys. All right, the next game we have the Rams hosting the Packers. We talked about Aaron Rodgers as a possible cash game play. And again, it really looks like he's going to be coming from behind. The Rams with an insane 33-point total here at 56.5. There are 9.5-point favorites at home. They have looked borderline unstoppable to start the season. Gurley just scores touchdowns every single game, it seems like. They have 2 elite wide receivers, even though Kupp, they typically have 3, but Kupp doesn't look like he's going to play again this week. Is Gurley just, we talked briefly about it, but let's just kind of rehash it again. Is Gurley just too expensive at these, 11,000 on DraftKings? FanDuel, I've never seen such a thing. A little bit cheaper on DraftKings. But is he just that good? Is it just worth it to pay up for a guy that seems to just get it done every single game?
He looks too expensive on FanDuel for me. On DraftKings, I think it's a little closer. If you can figure that you can just play Kroll for free, that actually does free up a decent amount of salary. And, you know, 9,800 is fundamentally a lot less than the 11K you play on FanDuel. So, yeah, I think Gurley is playable over there. For cash, I just think the concessions just become too much at some point. And while Gurley has been truly excellent, just plopping down $11,000 on the table means that you are counting on excellence. And at least in the last, like, say, 4 weeks, there have been games where that excellence wouldn't have been automatic, right? Like last week, he winds up with 29 fantasy points. He did that on 19 touches. That's a lot of fantasy points for 19 touches. And there are scenarios where he only turns 19 touches into 20 fantasy points. And in that case, you're really unhappy on an $11,000 investment, you know? Gurley, it's just one of those cases where if you can find all the savings, of course you play the guy. But you know, I just don't think in past weeks you've needed to play him. I don't think you need to play him this week.
Right now, with Gurley in a top FanDuel lineup, the difference is at the 11,000, the difference in our projected lineups is it'd be like saying Gurley and Seth Roberts or Joe Mixon and Tyreek Hill. I think I'm doing that math correctly. Is there a group that's, does a Mixon Hill side of it just seem so much safer for what you're getting?
Definitely.
Or is it close?
Absolutely. I mean, and put similarly, Mixon Hill at those price points, you could also get Robert Woods and James Conner for the same amount of money, right? Like that is a ton of money to put into two players, and when one of them is Seth Roberts, like with a gun to my head, if I'm just trying to figure out this week, would I Joe Mixon or James Conner, could they outscore Todd Gurley? Yes, they absolutely could. Could Seth Roberts outscore Tyreek Hill? I'd be pretty surprised. So
right.
That's just kind of how I look at it. And, you know, it's not precise. Like, by the degree to which you outscore someone matters. I think if we had word that Roberts was going to play every snap and wasn't hurt, you know, there's other complicating issues. But I think that you don't want to play Gurley if it means having to get away from a really good $8,000 play.
Yep, I think I'm with you. I think that also, you know, on the Aaron Rodgers note here, I think we could see him just have a 40, mid-40s kind of pass attempts game. He's already averaging 42 pass attempts on the season so far, and this game looks like they're going to play from behind. Look, the Rams are still a good defense. They can really control the ball as well. So you're not, maybe just, you don't see as many opportunities. But if, you know, mid-40s pass attempts out of basically, you know, arguably the best quarterback in football is a spot you'd like to be, even though their implied total looks a little on the kind of on the low side, but that's mostly because they're playing the Rams. Final game is San Francisco goes in and plays Arizona. San Francisco is 1-point road favorites. Been a very tough team to get a handle on from a fantasy perspective. And just, like, you know, all the guys like Alfred Morris are carrying the ball. Then it's Breida. Then Raheem Mostert comes out of nowhere and just kind of carries the ball. No one understands why. They dealt with injuries in the wide receiver core at times. The Marquise Goodwin is coming off a good game. Anything you like here? I feel like I've had a hard time figuring out on a week-to-week basis, maybe outside of Kittle, like who exactly to target on the San Francisco side.
Yeah, San Francisco, you know, someone was asking about potentially playing Beat Hard there in cash games last week, and I was pretty well against it. I mean, they were basically talking about running him with the same theory as running Rodgers, except for the problem is he's not Aaron Rodgers. He's someone who's much, much, much worse. And we've seen that the passing attack can completely fall apart for San Francisco. And when you're in a situation like that, I just don't find any reason whatsoever to invest in the people that are a part of that passing attack. And so, yeah, like George Kittle is a good player. It looks like he's a solid tight end. Tight end also happens to be a completely terrible position. And I can get a guy with the exact same track record as him for my money in Njoku for $1,000 less. And I'm going to do that. And you could argue that Njoku's quarterback player is better too. So yeah, I'm not going to be touching any of the San Francisco passing attack. I don't think, I mean, I guess I could be persuaded for big tournaments that some of these guys have upside, Kittle in particular, like if he just happens to catch two touchdowns, but why am I in this business? That's what I'd be asking myself at halftime when, you know, Marquise Goodwin has one target for one catch and 20 yards. I'd be sitting there going, what did I do to myself? Weren't there better options? And the answer would have been yes.
David Johnson had the best game of his season against San Francisco 3 weeks ago. He carried the ball 18 times. He had a couple receptions, scored two touchdowns. He's 6,700 on DraftKings. If you want to translate like the one performance onto the other, he touched the ball more than 20 times when he counted the targets. Is 6,700 too cheap for a guy? It still seems like they want to get him the ball. There's very few games where they're going to be in the game. Denver and Minnesota are tough matchups. Let's say they had Chicago and the Rams. They've had something of a tougher schedule. They're also just a bad offense. But I don't know, 6,700, this is David Johnson. He's touched the ball almost 20 times a game over his last four games. Is that enough to kind of possibly think about him, especially in PPR on DraftKings?
You can think about it. Denver, not a tough matchup this season, by the way. Denver's been horrendous against the run. But the thing about Johnson is he's now touchdown dependent. The yards per carry on him, I mean, this is just truly disgusting. If you want to go on a game by game basis, like 14 carries for 39 yards, awful. You want to go, what was the next one? Oh yeah, 18 carries for 54 yards, 18 carries for 55 yards, 22 carries for 71 yards, 12 for 31, 13 for 48, 9 for 37. You'd think the guy would just take the ball and run for some amount of distance once on the course of the season, right? He has none. No good runs. Like you go for the entire season. His longest run is 21 yards on 106 attempts. This guy's a shell of himself. They burnt him out. He hasn't recovered from the injury last season. He's just not a good player anymore. It's too bad. But he should be treated with the same amount of reverence at this point as all the other running backs in the mid-tier 6,000s, which is play him in a great matchup. But that's, you know, almost never happens for a team as bad as the Cardinals. So I suspect Arizona is just on the fast track to the first overall pick in the draft. And part of that is because David Johnson is just not the guy he used to be.
Yep. And when it comes to, when you just look at like some Pro Football Focus, just offensive and defensive line ratings, the Cardinals have just one of the worst offensive lines in football. Like Buffalo makes them look awesome. But other than that, there's very few other offensive lines. So he's He's older. He's coming off the injury. Those shouldn't matter as much, but also he's just not getting – the team just know how to scheme against them, which is to say just stack the box. He can't run anywhere. And I just can't believe we're staring at a David Johnson 6,700 price tag and not auto-locking it. But that's just the
state of – The guy gets 3 yards a carry and, notably, 3 yards less per reception than he was when he was actually good too. It's just not – it's not the same player. It's the same name, but you might as well just treat him as – some other random guy named David Johnson came up, but who's not good? That's how I look at this guy.
All right. On that note, dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, dfsr.com/deals, gets you that free 7-day trial, and then it's just $24.95 a month. So better all around if you're a podcast listener and want to jump on that. That's going to be around probably just to the end of this Sunday, and that will be it, because now that we're fully into basketball and have been doing great, so we don't really need to provide another 7-day free trial. It's been, we've been giving people too much, buddy. Go back to 3 days. Go back to 1 day.
We'll discuss.
I feel like I'm gonna make that decision. All right, dailyfantasysportsrankings.com. Go check it out. We'll be back again next week for doing a recap and all the other stuff. Go and check out our NBA podcast as well. I'll put the link to that feed if you're playing NBA DFS, because we had another big podcast coming up for today. Buddy, enjoy your week 8 of football. Talk to you next week.
I will enjoy it, because I know it'll take way too long for you to figure out how to get rid of the trial.